Ku Iluna, please rise. Auhea oko eko ka aha. Inahe kuliana imua okea. Aha ho'okolo kolo ki ke hano hano o ka moku aina ohoi. E nāoi mai, e maliu mai, i lohi ia ka leo. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having any business before this honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii, draw nigh. Give your attention and you shall be heard. E noho I lalo. Please be seated.
Please call the case. We'll let Justice Wilson sit down. Now call the vote.
Case number FPWC-18-0000381. State of Hawaii versus Don Matuli. Arguing for the petitioner, Deputy Public Defender Phyllis J. Hironaka. Arguing for the respondent, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney Ryan R. Minshew. Argument on the merits.
All right, good evening and aloha, everyone. The court is honored to be here at the William S. Richardson School of Law. Ms. Hironaka and Mr. Benson, are you both ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
All right. You've each reserved, you've reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Ms. Hironaka will give you a warning light 5 minutes to go. It's kind of small and hard to see, but it will be there. Mr. Benson will give you a 5-minute warning as well. Thank you. Please proceed.
Okay. May it please the court. Is it on?
Yes, I can hear
it. Yeah. Don Nioli respectfully requests that this honorable court vacate the ICA's memorandum of opinion and reinstate the circuit court's findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order, granting in part and denying in part for motion to suppress evidence. Petitioner Nioli contends that the ICA gravely erred in two principal ways. One, in ruling that the circuit court wrongly concluded that on the facts of this case, police failed to allow Nioli a reasonable amount of time to respond to the demand for entry, and two, vacating that portion of the circuit court order granting the motion to suppress evidence. Nioli's application reiterates argument A from her answering brief. In short, the ICA concluded that on the facts of Nioli's case, 25 seconds was a reasonable amount of time for her to have answered the door. However, as explained in the application, although the knock and announce procedure took 25 seconds, the police waited essentially only 6.25 seconds after hearing a female voice from within before breaking down the door. And 6.25 seconds is a constitutionally unreasonable amount of time. The ICA's reasoning in support of its conclusion that 25 seconds was sufficient was based on unsupported and incorrect assumptions. And essentially, on page 6 of the memorandum of opinion, that last paragraph is what appears to me to be the entirety of the ICA's ruling, or reasoning, excuse me. I have three major points there, which is number one, that the ICA presumed that Ms. Nioli would have been awake on a Friday because it was a weekday at 6 in the morning. The second was that the ICA presumed that the neighbor's dog barking might have or would have woken up Nioli and alerted her. And third, that the ICA added impermissible time to its reasonable amount of time calculation. And let me start with the first part, which is that the ICA presumed that Ms. Nioli would have been awake on Friday. There was no testimony about what day of the week it was, but the ICA took judicial notice that it was a Friday morning. And it's undisputed that the time that the officers were doing their knock and announce was 6:12 in the morning. I believe warrants, the one that was at issue in this case, could be served between 6 and I believe 11 at night. So the police were well within their time frame. However, regardless, 6 in the morning is
well
fairly,
within.
Pardon me.
Well within.
Well, that's the next part of what I'm saying is that 6 in the morning, most people or many people can still be expected to be asleep. And so that it's really quite early, as far as expecting people to be awake and, cognizant enough that they could hear the police knocking on the door, hear the clamor outside, hear the Demand
for
entry.
Was it Sana?
There was no testimony about that.
Can we take judicial notice?
Sure. But that still does not...
The sun was down. It didn't rise until later, 6:17.
Okay. But I mean, regardless, you know, at that hour in the morning, generally speaking, it's still what people refer to as quiet hours.
Yeah. But nonetheless, it was 6 in the morning.
Correct.
Whether dogs were barking, whether the sun was coming up. And it seemed to be significant to the circuit court judge. And as you pointed out, the ICA sort of combed the record to identify facts that added to the proposition that it was a reasonable period of time. So how do you suggest we address the role of the appellate court? In other words, it's the burden of the government, clearly, to establish whether it was reasonable or not, or to establish whether there are exigent circumstances. But is it your view that, from the point of view of the court, this re-examination of the record is the appropriate role for the appellate court at this point?
No. Absent something outrageous, that's, if I want to take a step back for a minute, clearly Judge Prater thought very carefully about his decision in this case. He said, and I quoted that in my application, as well as in the answering brief, that he was inclined to at first deny this motion to suppress outright. But as he listened to the testimony of the police officer, whom he found credible, he concluded that the amount of time that the police officer waited was insufficient.
Could I ask you about that? There's 25 seconds, but I saw the deputy public defender during argument said that actually was 25 seconds from the first knock to the third, and that he might actually add more time to that. Can you address that issue as to what the actual amount of time was?
Well, the trial court found that the sum total was 25 seconds. Yes, there was argument or comment by the deputy public defender that maybe we'll add 15 seconds to the 25, etc. But the court's finding and its findings of fact was that the sum total of the four knock and announce procedures lasted 25 seconds.
And that wasn't challenged, huh?
That was not challenged.
What about the fact that the officer testified that after the third knock and announce, he heard a voice inside that he thought was directed at him? How does that cut? I mean, does that raise suspicion that there might be somebody inside who's aware that they're there and isn't coming to the door, and that creates an exigency in some way?
I don't believe it creates an exigency, but I do believe that it creates the notion that somebody is awake and responding to the door. What I find troubling here is that the police did not wait. It was undisputed that there was a female voice heard inside the house after the third round of the knock and announce. But the police did not wait any further to hear if footsteps were approaching the door. They couldn't understand what the voice said. They could hear that it was female, and that's all we know. But they did not wait any further to see what was going to happen.
They did another knock and announce.
Yeah, they went directly, and that's part of my point, is that they went directly into the fourth knock and announce. And when you're doing these knocks and announces, you're making a lot of noise outside, so that would obscure whatever you're trying to hear coming from the inside. So my argument is that the police should have waited more to hear if anything further came of that female voice inside before proceeding with their fourth.
And wasn't this of significance to the trial judge in the sense that, as a part of the findings of fact, the trial judge noted that there was no discernible pause, despite the fact they heard a voice. There wasn't a discernible pause, and in that regard was focused on the factor of whether there was a sufficient pause that would allow for an adequate response, which I guess is the import of Garcia,
yes,
that there's supposed to be some opportunity for response.
And that, to me, was important in the court's findings, where he said there was no discernible pause between any of the four knocking and announcing.
And didn't the court also find specifically the non-existence of exigent circumstances, because the court found that there was no evidence that the occupants were aware of police presence and taking steps to destroy evidence.
That's correct. There was no scurrying about, crashing, as in some of the other cases that were distinguished by the ICA. So even the ICA agreed that there was no exigent circumstances in this particular case.
And again, that's not challenged.
No.
Well, the 25 seconds was significant, wouldn't you say, to the trial court as well as the ICA? This is a big focus, 25 seconds.
The ICA, I believe, added on impermissible time. So although the 25 seconds was in the record and the circuit court found that there was 25 seconds, this not been announced procedure took, it appears that the ICA added on time to that or considered the fact that the time that the neighbor went late took to go from his room to the front door, to go outside, see the police and, the armor and all that stuff outside, hear the police wrestling with the gate, as he said, talking about Night Ollie's gate, that should not be counted because the police hadn't even gotten into the property, Night Ollie's property, much less got to the front door and started to knock him down. But as I look at the ICA's reasoning in that section that I pointed out, it appears that the ICA has added that time into its conclusion that 25 seconds was sufficient.
Well, the 25 seconds was measured from the point of the knock.
Correct.
Now, I think your point is that for some reason the ICA decided to add additional time that had to do with when the dog started barking and when the police might have gotten to the perimeter fence. Okay. Well, let's just assume that we're analyzing it as the courts have in the variety of cases that we have, not the least of which is Garcia, where you're looking at the point of time after the knock, 25 seconds. So in the state of Hawaii, a citizen before their door is broken down and they're about to be arrested has a certain period of time that we're now evaluating as reasonable. Clearly, 10 seconds, I think, would be considered, even conceded by the ICA, as being unreasonable.
Yes.
But do you know of any evidence, is there anything in the record that would suggest that 25 seconds or a minute is too much time to give citizens before their door is broken down? Especially in a situation where it's not a weapons case and it's not a situation where they're scurrying around that would create an exigent circumstance and it's 6 in the morning.
Correct. I mean, that's the Hawaii case law is that they give the occupants a reasonable time based on the particular facts and circumstances of that case. And so 6 in the morning is a very important factor because many people are still asleep at 6 in the morning. When the police approached the house, there didn't appear to be any activity going on. It was quiet. So you could presume that perhaps the occupants are asleep. So in order to wake somebody up, when you're at that front door, starting your first knocking announce procedures, it would be quite reasonable to take a couple of knock and announce procedures to, wake the occupant up and get them to realize, hey, there's somebody at our front door that's demanding entry. So out of the 4 knock and announce procedures, I would say at least 2, half of the 25, would be 12 and a half seconds, is reasonable just to kind of wake the people up. And then, sure enough, by the 3rd round, we heard a female voice respond, so somebody was waking, okay? And so then, after you hear the female voice, then you should give them a reasonable amount of time to get to the door and answer it, or see that whether they're going to, try to destroy evidence, et cetera, didn't go that way in this case.
Does it matter?
Instead of just banging the door down, completing the 4th knocking and announcing banging the door down. I'm sorry
to interrupt you. Does it matter that if the person is already awake?
Certainly, but there was no testimony.
I'm just asking you. You're saying because 6 o'clock is so early in the morning, you're going to presume that somebody was asleep.
Right.
But the testimony is she's walking down the hallway when she heard the first knock. So, didn't she get up to go to the bathroom?
Yes.
But it wasn't. She got up to go to the bathroom. So, that's assuming that the knocking didn't awake her. So, does that matter? If the, and it may not, but if the person is already awake, in your calculation of 6 o'clock is so early that you have to presume someone's asleep. Does it matter in your calculation that she's already awake?
In this case, there was no clarifying testimony about what woke her up, when she woke up, whether it was the knocks on the door that woke her up. And
so you're saying that she said she could have thought, there are knocks on the door, but I'm going to get up and go to the bathroom instead of answering. Knocks on the door saying, police, open up, but I'm going to get up and go to the bathroom?
Well, it appeared to me, and now I'm kind of surmising here, okay, based on what's in the record, is that when she realized that there was somebody, she was on her way to the bathroom, when she realized that it was police knocking down the door, she changed her, headed direction towards the front door, but by that time the police already came in the house.
I think that sounds like a reasonable, that's when I read it, but does that make a difference in your calculation? I guess is my question, if she's already awake.
Well, okay, what I was going to say, partly in response to what Justice Wilson said, but also in response to your question, is that there's no evidence in the record about when in the knock and announce procedure she was woken up. So you were saying if the first knock and announce woke her up...
I'm saying...
That she was,
no, my question is if she was awake already, how would that affect your argument regarding it being... So early in the morning, you have to presume someone's asleep. What if she was awake already before the police came? Before the knocking started?
Okay. Then 25 seconds sounds like a reasonable amount of time under those circumstances.
Counsel, are
but
you saying...
Again, there's no record of that.
In response to that question, are you saying that whether somebody is up or not determines whether or not the time is reasonable? In other words, the police, we're not going to know whether it's reasonable unless somebody's up. Counsel, what the law says in this situation, Dorsen and all these other exigency cases, it's what's happening on the ground in the sense that if she's up and the police hear her, and therefore they start becoming concerned that or they hear scurrying. But whether or not when they knock on the door, on how much time there is, does not determine reasonableness.
That's true, Your Honor. That's true. I agree.
So if they had come, the police had arrived and the lights were on and like the TV was on and there was signs of movement inside, 25 seconds would have been adequate in those circumstances.
Hard to say, okay? At the 6 in the morning hour, okay, you can obviously imagine a situation where somebody has fallen asleep with their lights on, TV running, etc., and they slept throughout the night. So at 6 in the morning, it sounds like there's activity going on, but perhaps the person is knocked out. Okay. So again, each case is different on its facts. And what the police know, from the outside, because I think that was the, which of the three cases, maybe Garcia, where they had approached an apartment and they could hear the TV or voices inside, but it was at 7 in the evening, so it was, I don't believe so, but it was at a time where people would be, expected to be awake, etc., and so in that case, perhaps the amount of time that you would wait might be shorter. I think that was the 10-second case.
So if this case happened in the middle of the day, your view would be the procedure here would have been the amount of time would have been adequate. Everything else was the same, so 11:15 in the morning.
11:15 in the morning, and if it took the up to the third round for somebody to, go, oh, there's somebody at my door, okay, I still think that they should have waited an amount of time after the third round, because now, clearly, somebody inside has been alerted to police at the door, right? Waited to see if the door was answered, and then, it sounds like the door was going to be answered, but that the breakdown was not, breaking down the door then was not necessary.
So even if we're 11:15, you think they should have waited longer, given that they heard some response?
They heard response.
Actually, though, I thought the defendant said that it wasn't like she was on her way to answer the door. She said they knocked and broke in.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no evidence in the record that she was on her way to open the door.
No,
right.
But she said she was on her way to the bathroom, and that when she heard that banging, she was going to turn, go answer the door, but they'd already broken in.
Well, they said they heard a voice. Right? So what you're looking at what's in their minds.
Right, the police at the front door, yes.
If you hear something inside and it's not scurrying or crashing, you should reasonably give a little more time. Is that
right? Yes, yes, that's my position.
Well, one of the reasons for the statute is to prevent property damage.
Correct.
Right? So the idea is if they're not destroying property, you've got to wait to give them a chance to open the door so they're not.
Well, Correct. But I think my humble opinion, I think we jumped the gun in this. Anyway, we were talking about many of the points that I wanted to discuss.
The defendant also, she didn't say she said anything, though, did she?
She wasn't asked during her testimony nor during the cross-examination, so we don't know if the female voice was the defendant or another occupant, because there was evidence that there was another woman that was in the house. I think there might have even been a second person in the house. It sounded like an all-female house, from what I could gather from the transcript, but there was no testimony about who was the person that said something that was saying. I'd like to point out that the ICA gravely erred in concluding basically that the 6.25, or possibly even 12.5 seconds, amounted to a reasonable amount of time. In reality, Ms. Nioli had maybe 6.25 seconds to go and answer the door. And because, as the court found, the entire knock and announce procedure lasted 25 seconds, that there were no pauses between the rounds, I've just sort of a rough math division here and say 25 seconds breaks down into four rounds of 6.25 seconds each. And another concern I have is that if you don't pause significantly between rounds, you can't hear if there's a response coming from within, because you're making a lot of noise on the outside trying to wake up the person and get the person to the door. And so I would say that a reasonable amount of time should be counted from when they do hear that third female, after the third knock and announce, when they hear the female voice respond, that they should be thinking about reasonable time starts here.
How long? I'm just curious, how long could they have waited?
That's hard to say. Because, you know, it depends on what they hear. If they hear scurrying about that they think evidence is being destroyed.
Under these circumstances,
I would say 5 to 10 seconds, at least, at least 6 seconds. I was
from
trying
what?
It out. From the last knocking in demand for entry.
From the fourth one or the third?
The third one, they heard a response, right?
Right, they heard a voice.
So they should have given a good, I would say, 10 seconds to flesh it out and see if somebody came to the door, if they heard further voice, or, you know, anything that made them think that evidence was being destroyed or whatever.
So
if the person didn't come to the door, then go into your fourth knock and announce, you know, and you can go ahead and break in.
So a woman in a house, before the sun rises, hears banging at the door and people yelling, and you don't think maybe the person should be given the opportunity maybe even to call the police at that point?
Sure.
Maybe call somebody?
Sure, absolutely.
You just gave, your answer was to give them 6 seconds.
Well,
was she dressed, incidentally? Is that enough time?
There's no testimony about that.
Well, your response was 6 seconds.
Well, my response is about responding, that there should be a verbal in there somewhere.
You heard a verbal.
Yeah. But you know, once they heard a verbal, they didn't wait any further, right? They should have waited further to see, you know, I'm coming, wait, I hear you, etc. At least they've been acknowledged, right?
I find it interesting that you've given her 6 additional seconds.
I mean, that's just my
opinion.
Yes.
That, as Justice Pollack is alluding to, the need to only give her 6 seconds, I assume, from your point of view, the need is so that evidence isn't destroyed, correct? But
no,
there's a countervailing
right
point. that is then knocking it out statute point that Justice Acoba addresses directly. You know, the evil that's trying to be avoided, the loss of property, as Justice Nakayama says, but there's also the possibility of somebody being hurt.
Absolutely.
So to consider that 6 seconds becomes too much of a threat in terms of possibility of the destruction of evidence, and that that would outweigh the need of a citizen. Does a citizen have a constitutional right that's at issue here?
Yes, absolutely.
Is it a fundamental right?
Absolutely.
And what is that?
Right to privacy.
Right to be free from unreasonable search and seizure. And the house is about, it's not
your
as
house
though
is your castle.
The house is going to be opened with a device that allows for opening without destruction of property. Right?
Okay.
The door is going to be broken down. 8 people are part of the group that's going to break down the door. So this 6 seconds that you've given her is confusing to me. Why she would only get that much more
perhaps
time?
Perhaps let me take that back. I mean,
well, it is a 900 square foot house, right?
It is a 900 square foot house, but the dimensions of it were not really put into evidence. There were 2 photos that went in that showed what it looked like on the front side, like from the one side, like the left side-ish and the right side-ish from the, apparently the straight side in, but the configuration of the house, you know, the blueprints, if you will, were not attested to. And so we don't know where, you know, the hallway, the bathroom, all these places that were mentioned actually were. But going back to Justice Wilson's point there about the time, I mean, I will withdraw that suggestion and allow the justices to make that decision about how much is a reasonable time. But again,
isn't the reasonable time,
yes,
shouldn't it be defined by giving the person the reasonable opportunity to surrender their privacy?
Yes, correct.
Because isn't that what we're looking at here? What we're looking at is in order for the police essentially to force their way in, they effectively need, when they're pounding on the door saying, let me in, what they need to be able to do is to infer based on conduct or time that the person is denying entry. And in order to infer a denial of entry, there's got to be some significant time lapse we're talking about. We're not talking 1 or 2 seconds. We're talking an ability of an individual in the dwelling to be able to get dressed if they need to be able to get out of the toilet if that's where they are, or the shower, or wherever they are, and to be able to retain their dignity to walk up to the door and open the door.
You're correct, Justice. I stand for this. Basically, Your Honor,
Mr. Knuckle, was the testimony that they were just shouting at the door and knocking? Weren't they identifying themselves and identifying their purpose?
That was the testimony. Police, we have a search warrant open the door now. So they did comply with the statute, you know, that requires them to identify those things. But basically, in conclusion, as I stated in the beginning, 6.25 seconds that Ms. Nioli was given was a constitutionally unreasonable amount of time to wait before the police broke in this case. And so, again, we would ask the Honorable Court to please reverse the memorandum of opinion of the ICA.
Let me ask you this. Would it have been different if they had only said it twice but left more time to hear perhaps what was going on? I mean, you keep on saying 4 times does seem, you know, a lot. But it seems like it's, at some point in time, we encourage them doing it more, but then you're saying maybe the 4th really was more interfering.
In this particular case, it was, I believe, because there had been a female voice responding, right? And it, the 4th time, you know, obscured the ability of the police to hear if there was any further answer or an approach, footsteps approaching the door or something like that. But my two rounds is way too short. You know, a reasonable amount of time. I think the police stated, not that they're the bastion of what is the right standard, but that generally they do a 3-round knocking announce. And so at a minimum, they should have knocked on the door three times and waited an appropriate amount before proceeding to the next hearing.
Thank you for your argument. We'll hear from Mr. Winston.
Good evening, Your Honor. I agree. It's the standard for when you enter the column should be an objective one. So, Griesman's standard. So it shouldn't depend on what testimony later indicates what was going on inside the house. It should be based on what the police officers might reasonably expect to be happening in the house based on objective reasons. But I would suggest that you could be completely quiet and be destroying evidence. I mean, we could knock five times, okay? We could knock three times and then wait 2 minutes, okay, and not hear anything, okay? And we'd still be, you know, and they could still be flushing this methamphetamine down the toilet. So, and there's always going to be a tension between what the police want to do. They want to get in before the evidence is destroyed. They want to get in without protecting their personal safety. And perhaps what might happen in an ideal situation where it would give the suspect plenty of time to come to the door and get their clothes on and call the police. Although I don't know if calling the police would help, because if you call 911, I don't know if they're going to know that the particular team is there, where the particular team is executing a search warrant at the time. So it could take 5-10 minutes to confirm that, okay, these are really police officers outside the door and not just
So one of the purposes of executing a search warrant, especially in a drug situation, is to catch the people by surprise.
Yes, Your Honor.
And one of the reasons to catch them by surprise is that so they don't arm themselves.
Yeah.
So how would you tell whether or not a person is arming themselves?
You can't come outside. It's very difficult. I mean, they went into what they'd been briefed on before they went into the house. They had identified the defendant as a suspect in this case. So they knew that one of the persons in the house was a woman. But, you know, she could have had a friend over.
Mr. Vincent, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm trying to follow your argument. You have indicated that there's a tension that law enforcement faces when they're going to exercise a search warrant in a drug case because there are drugs within the house. But that's not an exigent circumstance. That has been specifically determined by our court, correct?
And I'm not arguing there are exigent circumstances in this case.
All right. And then if it's not an exigent circumstance, then we have a specific statute, the purpose of which, as stated by Justice the purpose of the knock and announce rule is to notify the person inside of the presence of the police and of the impending intrusion. Give that person time to respond. Avoid violence and protect privacy as much as possible. So this concern, this evil, if you will, that is posed by violence and the idea of a person not getting a chance to respond and having their rights violated is identified as a priority that you might say is meant to weigh against this idea that somebody can always destroy drugs.
Well, I mean, statute is just it's very vague. It's not going to be...
Well, however vague it is, it's been interpreted by the Supreme Court to have as its purpose to give a person time to respond and avoid violence.
And if officers... and say, knocked and announced one time, and then waited 20 seconds, it would have given defendant time, had she woken up on the first knock and announce, to get to the door.
How about 6:12 in the morning? Even the police officer who testified, he said something like, you know, so you try to keep it simple. Well, so they can hear it, really waking them up early in the morning, 6 o'clock. You know, so we let them know we're not breaking into the house. So the police chose a time. You know, you were talking about this destruction of evidence, and I had a couple things factor into that. One, the police chose the time at 6:12, which a significant portion of the population is going to be sleeping, correct?
That's correct. This is the proverbial dawn or dawn
right.
Rate,
well,
okay?
Wait, I want to get to that just after. Okay, so 6:12, people are going to be sleeping, possibly, maybe a third of the population. Some people are going to be in the bathroom. Some people are going to be in the shower. Some people are going to maybe even be in their backyard. In other words, they're picking a time where they're almost setting up a no-knock situation because they're not going to be able to give enough time for people to get dressed, get out of bed, or hear it, or if they have a radio going, or they're listening to something, a podcast or whatever it is. I mean, we're setting up a situation where lots of people are going to get their door knocked in. And let me just go on to the second point, because you said we're in this proverbial situation. And I wonder, are we really, okay? How many officers were there? 17, I think. Is that right?
There were 16. Yeah.
Plus a supervisor.
Plus three other. But there was 19.
Oh, 19 police officers on this 700-square-foot house. I hear that, and I think to myself, or 900, why did they do it this way? Why couldn't they have posted somebody, waited for the person to walk out the door, to get her mail, to get the newspaper, to go to the car? I mean, in that, they selected a situation that, in order to effect this warrant in a way to create the situation that was going to allow them to bust in when there were so many alternatives.
Well, waiting for the suspect to leave the house or car, for the house to be completely empty.
Why does it have to be completely empty?
Because if there's anybody in there, then we've got to do the knock on the mouth, right?
No, but you can go up to the person when they leave the door and say, hey, you don't have to deal with, you see, the person comes out, I have a warrant to go into your house. And you have the right to detain, as you know, right? You have the right to detain occupants when you serve a search warrant. So you, even if you don't have probable cause, you're allowed to tell somebody, look, stay outside here while we go serve this warrant. So the police chose and did this in a way that maximized breaking down the door.
Well, in terms of the property damage, I can assure you that HP, if that's your primary concern, HP will replace the door. Okay? That's at HP's cost.
That is
okay?
Not. My concern is breaking people's door and invading people's houses and not giving people the opportunity to open the door and retain and not wake up and have 16 police officers in their front entryway.
And the commanding officer's primary concern is that none of his men are injured or killed, okay, during the execution of the warrant. Okay?
Is that
and
the primary
that is
concern?
That is, yes.
Because in this case, for example, if there had been a period of time after the woman's voice had been heard, and as the circuit court judge said, rather than having no discernible pause, there was a pause, and she came to the door and had a conversation and opened the door, the risk to the officers would have been less than the risk posed when they knocked down the door.
The problem is that make this rule fluid and hard to establish. At some point, they're going to have to come in, okay? And they don't know whether the suspect inside is right outside the door at the time that, you know, unless they establish contact, okay? And there was no evidence.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
There was no evidence that this person was trying to establish contact, tell officers.
I thought there was evidence that they heard her voice.
They heard
the
her
officers
voice.
Thought she was speaking.
That's right. But it could have been, go away. I don't want you to hear. You know, I'm not going to open the door.
If that's what they would have heard, then it would have been conveyed to them that that was a denial and they could have entered freely at that point. That is not what the police officer testified to.
I
discovered over a kilo or
just a little bit less than a kilo.
Is it infrequent to have arms in a drug house?
I wouldn't know how frequent or infrequent, but I do know that we had a case a couple of months ago. They were executing a warrant in the Century Building. Somebody pulled a gun and they shot.
Well, I mean, so although it seems, overkill to have so many officers, but there's always a possibility, especially with a meth house, that there may be violence that may ensue. So, which is why you're saying the commander was concerned for the safety of his officers, in addition to, of course, the main purpose of executing the search.
But it's especially important for the commander to be educated enough to understand that that is not an exigent circumstance. The fact that there is meth.
I'm not condemning it's exigent circumstance. I'm just saying that they have their procedures. They follow their...
I think we're thinking together on this, but to complete the point, a commander has every reason to be concerned and to make it clear there's an exigent circumstance where there's probable cause to know that they're dying. That just doesn't happen to be the case here. Was there any indication that this individual was violent?
There was no indication that there was guns in the house and that apparently in the brief.
And if there was, Mr. Benson, if there was any basis to believe there was guns, the police could have gotten a no-knock warrant, and a no-knock warrant was actually referred to by the police officer who testified in this case. So they can get no-knock warrants, and they didn't ask for one.
But this is a process Officer Rhodes testified he participated 50 or 100 times. So this is the regular process of citizens having their doors broken down. And what we're talking about here is a circumstance where a certain type of citizen, one that's nonviolent, no history of violence, no evidence of guns, 6 o'clock in the morning,
I don't know if they have
who says something that is not interpreted as scurrying around or destroying evidence. So this particular citizen is in a situation in which there's a question about whether it's really necessary to break down her door. And we're talking about whether 25 seconds was reasonable.
Well, I mean, I time myself the distance it takes to walk 25 feet, and it's about 10 seconds. Well, for me, it's like 8 seconds, but for her, it's a little long.
So she had plenty of time, is that your
That's
point?
Correct. She had more
to
than
be able to. But that's assuming that she just goes directly to the door. And like in any case, she goes to the door and she starts saying, I'm not sure, whatever she's saying, it sounds to the officer as though maybe she's trying to communicate to the officers.
But they
don't pause. There's no discernible pause.
There's no indication she went before. She was in the hall.
Well, she must have been somewhat close to the door if they heard her voice, right?
I don't think they could hear her very well.
Well, I mean, if she's screaming from the back of the house, maybe, but that's not the evidence. They heard her voice, and there's no evidence that it was voiced especially loud. So I'm just suggesting she's close enough with the door that they could understand that she's within the vicinity, but the choice is to break down the door in that situation. And therefore, I'm not sure that you can come to the conclusion that it was a reasonable opportunity for her to
Mr. Vincent, is there any evidence that it was the defendant's voice? Ms. Hironaka herself said,
no.
You don't know whose voice it was. So we can't say that the defendant is walking towards the door, calling to them, saying anything, because she didn't say she said anything.
There was another woman about her age, and a 14-year-old girl.
Yeah, there were two other females in the house when they did break in. And another clarification, Officer Rowe didn't say he's broken down 50 doors. He said he's participated in 50
That's correct, yes.
Executions.
I don't know what happened. As I argued in my opening brief to the ICA, the court has a problem with the way that the search warrant is executed. Tell us. I think these officers made a good faith effort to comply with what they thought was the court's ruling. And it's a serious case, and we would ask this to be applied perspective.
But wait, yeah, I think...
We would like to be applied to search warrants executed after any opinion.
But we have held that what constitutes a reasonable period of time to respond to a not an announce must be determined by the circumstances of each case. So we would only be evaluating the circumstances of this case.
But I think that the other cases, Garcia, the other cases, although they were at a different time of the day, there's nothing that says you have to wait longer than 25 seconds or that you have to do the knock and announce more than a certain number of times.
Well, and it depends on the circumstances of the case, right? Like, what if you knew that the person's house that you were searching was deaf?
Well,
I'm just saying, it depends on the circumstances of the case.
Well, that's
right?
Correct.
And it depends on the time, right?
I mean, this is not...
Or the contraband might have been, like, stolen television rather than drugs. It might not be as fungible. That is the contraband.
And this has got to be... got to be a standard. Police can apply fairly easily.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that is the police officer testified that he has training weekly or something or monthly. He maybe changed on that. But one thing that was interesting, I thought, is he thought he was giving 1 to 2 minutes. So to me, when he was asked, how long do you, right? Isn't that correct?
Well, yeah, I don't know. And
wait, yeah. Was that his response that he thought he gave the occupants 1 to 2 minutes?
And
then when he timed it, he realized he didn't. So one has to question the training.
I believe it was a defense attorney that timed him as he did it, demonstrated.
That's what I mean.
Right.
So all this time he's apparently... been under the impression that he's been given 1 to 2 minutes and not 25 seconds.
What's your take?
But I mean, that's irrelevant as to whether or not it's reasonable or not. Okay? I mean, whatever the standard, I mean, whatever, again, as you know, whatever is the policeman's policy is not determinative here. It's what your interpretation of the statute is. Okay, and they can't call an attorney or to interpret statute every time they execute a search warrant. I mean they can attempt to call, you know, maybe after they get the briefing or so. But they can't do it in real time. Yeah.
Well, I guess Dr. Justice Pollack's, well, I don't want to interpret what he's saying, but they have to be reliable in timing their own. I mean, obviously they're anxious, you know, they're not. How reliable is it if they can't estimate their own time, I guess? How can we count on executing if we give them direction, but if they don't...
If you gave them direction and said, wait 20 seconds after they knock it out, they would get a stopwatch. And they would do it right on the 20 seconds, okay? Because they need an easily applied standard.
What's your take about the 40 seconds versus the 25? Because I thought public defender said, you know, that actually the 25 was from the first knock and announce to the third.
Yeah. 25 years, that would be the time they first knocked and the first knock and announce until they busted the door down. That's my understanding. And you have the video that the neighbor took, right? That was, I think, of the last knock. And I can see they do almost immediately go in after the fourth knock.
And why, under our prior case law, isn't that a problem?
Because they could have responded after the first one.
But our law says you have to give, when you give it, the person has to be able to give a chance to respond. And as I understood, I didn't listen to the audio, but it sounds like the person knocked, gave the warrant, then did it in succession 4 times real quickly. That's how else could you do it within virtually in 25 seconds?
Well, yeah, but I mean, they could have, after the first knock and announce, while they were performing the second, third, fourth one, responded. That's my point.
Perhaps one important criteria that is discussed in the case in terms of the discretion to be exercised by the officers would be to allow a pause.
That's fine. If you want to allow, if you think that's important, allow a pause. And the question is, of course, is how long is the pause?
Well, okay, I guess that's the point. If you do the fourth one, and everybody pretty much says they did the fourth one, they broke in. I mean, it's on the video, right? Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Well, why even do the fourth one if you're going to break in? If the purpose of doing it,
maybe we should just wait 5 seconds
is to
after the
third
one.
See if somebody
one,
responds, right?
Yeah. Well, but you know, there's no case law as far as I know that says you have to do three knock and announce.
Well, yeah, I know, but why even do it?
You could just do one. You could just do one and just wait 20 seconds.
But the purpose of doing it is for a response.
Right, right. But I mean, you know, I guess the reason why they do it more than once is because they're afraid.
Well,
maybe asleep.
It's 6:12 in the morning. You better do more than once.
Well, I mean, you know, some people are light sleepers and get up immediately. Some people.
But that
like
just
take like 3 minutes.
But
so
but that's just the problem.
Can we wait 3 minutes every single time?
No,
it's
but
not just the timing issue. It depends on, like, if you hear somebody saying, wait, I'm coming. I'm putting on my clothes. Can you wait? You know, that's one thing. But in this case, there's reason to believe that someone would be sleeping. And they don't hear anything until after the third knock.
And they waited 5 seconds after.
And then 5 seconds, and knock, knock, boom.
Well, they waited 5 seconds after they heard voices.
5 seconds after they heard voices, and they didn't even try to ascertain what the voices were saying.
Well, I don't know. And I don't know. It's
I mean,
wall,
it could be.
There's a wall.
Wait, who? What? What's going on? Wait, I'm coming. Right?
No, they didn't say that.
I'm just saying you don't know what they're saying, but it's. They hear voices 5 seconds later. They hear a voice 5 seconds later. They knock again and they break open the door without even waiting after that last knock.
Well, and the facts are with the facts. Unless you have a question.
What's your response to the fact that time of day? I mean, if do you think it's reasonable for us to craft the rule that's specific to early morning entries, or do you think we should avoid getting into the question of what time it occurred?
I mean, just get back to the time of day. There's a reason why they do it at dawn, is because people are not.
It depends on the circumstances.
They knock at the door. They're
a little frustrated. What if they worked the midnight shift and had gotten home at 5:00? Doesn't it depend on the circumstances of each case? It really depends. Or maybe someone, they worked the midnight shift and they came home at 3:00. And then so maybe, 8:00 or 9:00 you would still be expecting the person to sleep. So it depends on the circumstances of the case, doesn't it?
That's correct.
And
but
that's what our case law says.
But there's nothing in this doctor would indicate that they've worked a graveyard shift or anything like that. If they go in the morning, they want to, people are a little bit sleepy, a bit drowsy. They feel there's less chance that they're going to get a weapon or think to destroy the evidence. That's the real. I mean, it's a
Yeah, it sounds like what they're doing is swallowing entirely the exigency requirement by just presuming the exigency and deciding to go at 6:12 and heightening the probability that the door would be broken down.
What?
As I recall, it used to be 7:00 a.m.
Yeah, I don't know what.
Oh,
it is now 6:00.
Yeah,
it's now 6:00, but I just don't remember.
And I guess the reason why they don't like to do it later is because people may be going in and out of house. Exactly, kind of know more or less who's in the house when you go in there at 6:00.
What tools are available to officers if they're concerned about their safety?
Well, I mean,
in terms of the search warrant process, I mean, obviously they're heavily armed.
Right.
Them, but what steps are there to protect themselves in terms of the no-knock warrant? Are there other things that you think should be reflected in the law?
Well,
to protect that
no-knock warrant. Always going to be situations where the unexpected comes up. I think, 4 or 5 years ago, we had a case where I think we were showing the video where somebody was trying to arrest somebody in the Dunkin' Donut. The officer was shot.
I understand anecdotal examples can be useful sometimes. But if we try to look at the patterns that might underlie this concern that officers are going to be unduly injured by citizens when they have their houses broken into, or we consider the likelihood that there is going to be a loss of evidence if the officers give more than 25 seconds. Do you have any evidence that would indicate that this right that a citizen has, at least to have a reasonable opportunity to respond, needs to be restricted to just 25 seconds? Any evidence such as cases in which the drugs are being lost?
Well, I don't have any evidence that indicates it needs to be restricted to 25 seconds, but I don't have any evidence as to what other period of time would be satisfactory. It's going to be very...
So do we err on the side of the constitutional right of the citizen, or do we err on the side that this decision's been made with a knock and announce statute? The decision's been made, citizens get an opportunity to respond.
We err on the side of the privacy of the citizen, but in this case, search warrant.
Yes, but I think you've answered my question. I just don't necessarily see the evidence that there's so much of a problem in terms of evidence being destroyed in drug cases that you can't give a citizen a minute or 2 minutes. It's just, maybe it's there, but it hasn't been offered in this record.
I mean, he was charged with a Class A felony, 20 years, potential 20 years, open 20 years. That's a powerful incentive to destroy him.
Well, maybe she knew there was a Class A felony that was at issue and the police showed up at her door. I suppose it's possible. I don't think there's any question that she understood it was a serious offense, even if it was a Class C, and she's going to go to jail for 5 years.
She's no fact.
She's dealing meth. It's not just possession of meth.
That's correct. This is a...
So there's no way it's a Class C, right?
It's a Class E.
And if she's dealing meth, does that necessarily mean she knows it's serious? I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a lot of speculation.
She had...
However serious the offense is, it's not relevant in terms of whether there's an exigent circumstance.
She did have a lot of drugs, and she had $38,000 in cash. So this was a big, substantial dealing traffic operation.
And you got it. It looks like the 25 seconds didn't end up causing the loss of all the cash and all the drugs.
Well, we didn't know where it was. I guess it turned out.
But using hindsight, I'm not sure that means that she shouldn't have been given a minute or that it would have been a big problem.
I mean, it would have been sitting stored above the toilet. Poured out of the rain.
That's possible.
5 seconds. Okay.
It didn't happen in this case, but it would have been hard for him to get rid of the cat.
Okay.
Anything further at this time?
No, no,
thank you. And this is for not being moved.
Well, I just have a couple of things. One is that I object to the prosecutor's use of facts that were not in the record. Particularly in this case, I was not aware of any of the actual amounts of drugs recovered because it's not in the record, nor the cash, etc. And also the references to the fact that of other cases that are not even at issue in appeal, the anecdotal evidence should not be considered by this court. Finally, I would like to dispute that a ruling that this court comes out with should be applied prospectively. We do have a law in place, which I think works quite well, which is that it's based upon the circumstances of each case and what is reasonable in the circumstances of each case. It's just that in this case, my point was that the ICA basically kind of rolled over what the trial court had already found gravely erred in reversing the trial court's ruling.
But constitutional questions are determined at a right wrong basis. I mean,
that's
in terms of the findings of fact, those are factual credibility questions for the court, but application of those facts to the law to determine whether there's been a violation is for us.
Yes.
Yes.
Mr.
Renaco, what's your response to the concern about officer safety? And is the rule you're advocating for one that's adequately going to protect the safety of the officers? Because while there was overwhelming force on the officer's side, if there was someone with a gun in the house and one of those officers was killed, that's certainly a situation none of us would want to see. Is the rule you're advocating for adequately protective of that interest?
Yes, I believe so. I mean, a reasonable amount of time, as folks have discussed in this argument, varies with every single case. And so it depends on what factual circumstances come out. You know, was there scurrying? Was there the sound of some, gun being prepared? There was nothing like that in this case. And so, what's reasonable varies from case to case.
Different case if there was some sound of someone arming themselves, moving about in the house to suggest something was happening.
Of course.
To attack the officer to defend himself, that would be a different case.
Of course. We just don't have that yet.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right, the court will take this matter under advisement. I want to thank each of our counsel, Ms. Hironaka and Mr. Vincent, for participating. You can be seated. So part where I say thank you to everyone for letting us make this. I want to do thank the court, everyone here at the law school, for welcoming us here. We have a great relationship with this law school. We work together in many different ways, improving access to justice and our efforts to go out into the community with the court. Particularly just last week, we were at Waipahu High School. We had almost 500 students and a number of folks in the community. Lawyers came and participated in preparing the students for that argument. The critical part of that was a brief about the case that the Students for Public Outreach and Civic Education here at the law school had prepared. So we want to thank the Spoche students for their help. And again, we have all kinds of ties with the law school that we value very much. Both through folks who work with us as externs law clerks, as alumni who serve as justices and judges, and just in the last few weeks, I've sworn in a number of proud Richardson alumni to the bench: Ron Johnson, Trish Moore-Powell, Kevin Souza here in this circuit, and Jeff Hawk in the Third Circuit. So again, our ties go back to the very, very beginning of this school, and it's something we value very much. So I want to thank Dean Kawakami, Dean Swiper for welcoming us here, Liam Skilling, for his assistance he's going to MC our question session with the students later. I want to thank Kari Carolyn for helping to organize the event. And again, since this is, I think, our last oral argument here with Dean Swiper as a dean, I want to thank Dean Swiper for his amazing leadership. I guess we might be here in the spring, but in case not, I do want to thank him for his amazing leadership here as he's going to retire as dean and go back to being a faculty member. So thank you, Dean Swiper, and again, thank you all for coming tonight, and again, thank you to our lawyers for helping me with this, presenting their argument in this unique environment. There being no further business, the court stands adjourned.
Eku iluna, please rise. Hua ho'oku ia mai ne kea aha ho'okolo kolo ki eke hano hano oka moku aino o Hawaii. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now adjourned. Enoho ilalo, please be seated.